Good morning, members. Call this meeting to order, and just a couple of quick things before we get started. I talked to Representative Hausman last week, and the bonding bills that are in our committee, or the proposed bills for bonding that are in our committee, will be proposals for next year. So we will not look at those, the rest of those bills, until the beginning of next year. So that's one thing. Secondly, there is an announcement about the continuing drought that should be in your folder, and that might be something you want to share with your constituents. On Thursday, we are going to do the Outdoor Heritage Bill and Representative McNamara's bill. And I did bring with me something that we will hand around, and I'll start with Representative Anderson in a minute. I just want you to read the label that says citric acid from corn. And so all of you corn producers who are going to be wanting to purchase a different kind of cleaning product, which I think is a really good one. And with that,
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Before you head to the witness table, I would move approval of the minutes from the Thursday, March 7th and Tuesday, March 5th meetings.
All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Minutes are approved.
Representative Wagenius, Ms. Thornton, welcome to the committee, and whenever you're ready, please move your bill.
All right, thank you, members. I would like to move House File 1113.
Representative Wagenius, could you maybe adjust the microphone ever so slightly?
We'll move over here a little bit.
Thank you.
This, members, is the bill that was developed by the LCCMR. This is the group of citizens and legislators who have a long and arduous process for designing a bill to wisely spend the lottery dollars, or the interest we get from our lottery money from the trust fund. And they have gone through this process, and I say they because I was not a member of the LCCMR when this proposal was developed. It was developed in the last year when the Republicans were in charge, and in fact Representative Hackbarth chaired the committee that developed this bill. I hope he comes, because he's going to know more about it than I do. Right now, I am on the LCCMR along with several members of this committee, and I think that sheet is in your packet. So what I'm going to do is to go over the proposals that they have made, and with me is the director of the LCCMR, Susan Thornton. The LCCMR has a strong staff and can answer any question. I will not be able to do that, but I would like to go over the bill with you. So I have moved the bill, and with that,
members, the motion before us is that House File 1113 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So we have that motion for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a good outline of this bill in your packet, and that is what I'm going to work from rather than from the bill itself, but you will notice it does have the bill lines marked on it, so you can follow either way. Just to know, this isn't in your packet, so you will, but the language is in the bill. I'm just going to, it isn't. These are the 46 proposals that were submitted out of 169, and the recommendations are for all the funds that are available, which is $29.5 million. It's $38 million. 29 will be left over for this year because the allocations are done in 2 years. So with that, let me just start with some of the proposals, or all of the proposals in here. I think they're worth all talking about. There's a group at the beginning of what I would call traditional proposals. They are proposals to help us understand the basic what is going on in Minnesota. They are data and information proposals, starting with the County Biological Survey. The work here is going to be done in Lake St. Louis, Beltrami, Clearwater, Lake of the Woods, and Coochie counties. The next proposal is for the county geologic atlases. We've had lots of discussions about the atlases. They define aquifer barriers and the connection of aquifers in the land surface and water surface. There are two parts. One part that goes to the group at the University of Minnesota, and the second part, Part B, that goes to DNR, which continues with the analysis of, it's been a partnership. It's been a partnership that has worked for years, in my judgment, too many years, and we've got to speed up this partnership. This time that DNR will be working on atlases for NOFA, Blue Earth, Clay, Morrison, Nicollet, Renville, Sherburn, Sibley, Wright counties, and the mapping of spring sheds and karsts in Winona and Houston counties. The next proposal on page 3 is the updating of Minnesota's wetlands inventory. Also on page 3, there's a conservation easement stewardship program. It's a final phase of an effort to bring the conservation easements held by DNR up to minimum conservation standards. Then on page 4, this is an interesting one. If you've been in Sudan mine, this is looking at the microbes at the bottom of the mine to continue their characterization. They are so unique, and scientists are believing that these very unique microbes may be very helpful in future be very useful in potential biotechnology. Again, on page 4, there's going to be a new approach to evaluating forest inventory and using data, trying to reduce costs and expedite future updates to improve overall usability of the inventory. Again, on page 4, we're going to look at identifying native Minnesota elms resistant to Dutch elm disease. Page 5, enhancing the timber sale program, looking at timber sale methods. Page 5 again, to evaluate management options used for woodland grazing. We're again on page 5 is a Parks and Trails land acquisition. We have now moved from looking at data that will help us manage our resources. Now we're moving on to another section and this is land and habitat restoration. In the first grouping of projects, proposal is to spend just over $8 million. In this section, it is $13.5 million. So, starting on page 5, there will be the acquisition of approximately 275 acres of inholdings in our park system and authorized state trails, including 80 acres in Otter Tail County, 115 acres in Cuyuna County State Recreation Area in Crow Wing County, and 80 acres for the Milltown State Trail in Rice County. On page 6, looking at restoration of scientific and natural areas, again on 6, acquiring 1-4 native prairie bank easements. Further down on page 6, looking at the conservation orders in the metropolitan area, and through either fee title or conservation easements, acquiring 530 acres to restore and restoration and enhancement. And that's in the greater metro area. On page 8 now, acquisition of approximately 80 acres for the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. This will be for wildlife habitat. Page 8 again. Grants to soil and water conservation districts for staff to re-enroll expiring lands to new programs for conservation purposes. I'd call your attention particularly to this one because there's been a lot of discussion, and there's $3 million allocated to Bowser for this. So just wanted to call your attention to that. On page 9, develop best management practices for creating moose foraging habitat. Page 9 again, to assess the potential to supplement traditional turf grass by providing critical floral plant resources to enhance bee pollinator habitat. Page 9 again, infrastructure to support conservation grazing in 10,000 acres of targeted wildlife management areas in partnership with local livestock producers. Page 10, permanent easement conservation on in the Avon Hills area in Stearns County. This is going to St. John's University. Page 11, acquire a portion of 12 acres for Frogtown Farm and Park to be established as a city park and an urban farming demonstration site. That's just for public land. Now, we've finished that section of land, and we're now moving into water resources, and this is almost $4 million. So, next section, we're starting on page 11. This is the first proposal is to DNR to continue develop and monitoring and modeling of reporting protocols for Minnesota lakes to be used in water quality and fisheries management. The next one on page 11, baseline geochemical and water quality dating for assessing and predicting water quality impacts of existing mineralization and potential impacts from future mining in northeastern Minnesota. Page 12, Heron Lake sediment and phosphorus reduction implementation projects. Page 12 again, southern Minnesota lakes restoration, and this is for up to 14 lakes in Blue Earth, Le Sueur, and Waseca counties. Page 12, to compare hydrology of habitats in the Glacial Ridge National Wildlife Refuge in Polk and Red Lake Counties, before and after restorations. Page 13, evaluate impacts to Lake Superior from changing thermal structure and invasive species. Page 13 again, this is an interesting one for me, to the University of Minnesota to test membranes made of thin polymers embedded with bacteria to generate clean water and energy in the form of hydrogen from wastewater. Page 13 again, looking at the antibiotics in Minnesota waters to measure the concentrations of antibiotics and antibiotic resistant levels. Page 14, now that finishes the water resources section, and I'm moving on now to aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, and this is over $10 million proposal. And the first of this is on page 14, and I think we all know about this. It's to the Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center at the University of Minnesota. And that's most of the money, $8.7 million. But there are a lot of other smaller projects all dealing with invasives. The first one's to the DNR for detection, and this is on page 14 now, detection and monitoring of Asian carp populations, determining the most effective tools for detecting emerald ash borer in different populations, the elimination of targeted, page 15 now, elimination of target invasive species. These are newly emergent terrestrial invasive species, and there's a list of them: Dalmatian, toad flax, cut-leaf teasel, Japanese hops, Oriental bittersweet, and Grecian foxglove. I only know of one of those, so we have lots of emerging species. And I think these terrestrial invasives as a group are something that this committee should spend some more time talking about. We do not have a terrestrial invasive species institute at the U or any place that pulls all this work together, and I think that's something that this committee should be talking about. I'm going on page 15 to continue the implementation of biological control for invasive garlic mustard. Page 15 again, to assess the ecological impacts of a commercially available molluscicide to test it on how it may impact native fish. And then on top of, on 16, a demonstration of whether multi-species grazing can be used to effectively control invasive plants. And that ends the section on invasive species. And we go on to environmental education. There are two projects here for $636,000. One of them is to the Minnesota Conservation Apprentice Academy to continue a program to train future resource conservation professionals. That goes to Bowser. And then there's the Youth Outdoors on page 16 again to provide outdoor recreation, education, and youth employment on the Mississippi River. And then the last two sections of the dollars are for the staff and administration, and then a contract agreement reimbursement with the DNR. And with that, those are the projects. You will note, I just will draw to your attention that there is also some statutory language change at the back of this bill. And I would just ask the director, we're starting on page 26. Since I was not in this committee, I just for her to tell you in just a few words what this language is attempting to do.
Ms. Thornton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Susan Thornton, Director of the LCCMR. As Representative Rudini has mentioned, starting on page 26 are some changes to 116P.15, which is the statutory language for the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. This is amending the land acquisition restrictions, which have been in place for quite a few, well, since I believe 2005, and it's lining it up more with some of the changes that have been made in the statutory language for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, so that those two structures are parallel there. And then on page 27, line 27.29, the 116P.16 real property interest report, that's the same situation, lining that up with Outdoor Heritage Fund language. So they had a chance, ours was in there earlier, they had a chance to work with it, do a little more cleanup, and so we're following suit. On page 28, on line 28.11, section 5, lands in the public domain. Again, this addresses review of lands purchased through these funds that already have permanent conservation easements on them, and it sets out a process. And again, this process is very similar to that in statute for the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
With that, members, that's the presentation of the bill. There are two amendments, one pretty technical and two that I will offer, but I thought maybe before I offer the amendments, you may want to ask questions.
Questions from members, Representative Kahn?
Yes. Representative Wiggins, since you said, of course, this was not done while you were on the commission, who were the legislators involved in drawing up this bill?
For that, I will turn to
House members, particularly.
Director Gordon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, and members, the House members were Representative Perkelson, Representative Hackbarth, Representative Shemansky, Representative Dill, and Representative Rukavina. The Senate members were Senator Jen Olson, and I'm running blank on
that's
the list.
That's all. That's good enough.
But you wanted the House list, right?
I don't care about that.
Representative Kahn.
Well, let me just congratulate them. This is one of the best LCCMR bills I think that I've ever seen. It's a wonderful combination of things affecting every part of the state, devoting a fair amount into research and so forth. And I'm not sure, given that list, I expected to do this, but it is sincere and it's absolutely excellent. So I hope that the new people on it do as good a job. Then I have one other financial question, and maybe you'll get to it, and that's page 18. Subdivision 10, the data availability requirements, which I think was old language I put into an LCMR, maybe even into an old LCMR bill. But what I'm interested in is, do we have any money attributed from LCCMR to pay for these costs? Because one of the things that Minute Services is mainly refundable activities.
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, there is not a specific appropriation related to this. The expectation is that the data developed will be in the form and format that can be usable by what's now MINUTE.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
I didn't understand that.
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, perhaps I need the question again.
Okay. The question is, is there money connected with this bill to pay for the costs that MINUTE will have to implement Subdivision 10 after they get the data?
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, no, there's not. And we have never been approached on that, although I agree with you, it's a potential real cost.
Well, at some point through the process, I think we need to talk to MINUTE and we need to look at something that is put it either into the administrative costs or a proportion on each project, I don't think makes sense. I think it makes sense to put it somehow either in administrative costs or allow LCCMR to bill back to the projects that are appropriate. It's compared to the cost of a, you know, almost $1 million or multiple hundred thousand dollar projects. It's a very tiny amount, but it adds up when we and we're trying to get all of these things in one place, which will dramatically add to the transparency of our process. So I expect to kind of ask that question on any bill that has these kinds of issues in it.
Duly noted, Representative Kahn. I think that's a good direction we should go and we'll continue the conversation. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a few questions. Ms. Thornton, on page 28, the last line, and maybe if you can help me with kind of the chronology here. So if the legislature approves an appropriation, which is recommended by the LCCMR, and that appropriation is for acquisition, and the recipient of the grant then has a number of parcels, and one of those parcels is currently owned or is currently in the public domain and would be having an easement or a fee title purchase of land that's in the public domain, does the purchase approval occur? What's the consideration of the purchase approval? Is it the recommendation that approved the appropriation, or is it post hoc after the acquisition purchase had been made on that parcel?
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, and members, this will be language that we're working with for the first time, and the chronology that led up to it really was where there had been easements, permanent easements purchased with the trust fund, and then there was a proposal as part of the list of acquisitions of which the legislature had approved a lump sum for acquisition, but not specific acquisitions, and that the so you had land purchased with public dollars that had permanent protection on it through easements, and then they were proposing to then go in and purchase the title. And the concern from the commission members, and it's a legislative policy issue, I believe, is that the public was not paying twice for the protection of public of land.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Thornton, and I agree with that. The question is, when does the approval come for that purchase? And maybe the way Section 5 is written, it's still not clear. I think when the public pays for land, either through fee title or easement, and then the public pays again, that's something we want to try to avoid. And I understand the subpart one, but subpart two is when does that approval by the commission occur? And I would hope that the intent was that the approval should occur prior to that purchase being made rather than post hoc.
Senator Pugenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think with the line 28.12, I agree with you, Representative Hansen, that should be the intent. I think the fund, when it says must not be used to purchase any land, and then you get an unless on line 28.15, and then two has to happen. So it seems to me, in my reading, that it has to happen. The approval has to happen first. If there is a way that needs to be clarified, I'd certainly be open to it, but that is the way I read it.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Ms. Taylor, is there any way to make that clearer or
Ms. Taylor, sorry to put you on the spot.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I agree with Representative Wagenius's interpretation, I think, with the must not in the first part of the section, that the purchase would need to be approved prior to the acquisition. However, if the committee would want to maybe clarify that, you could maybe after on line 28.19, after approved, insert, comma, prior to the acquisition, comma. Just to add some clarity.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and I would make that oral amendment on line 28.19.
Representative Hansen moves the oral amendment. Ms. Taylor, do you have it? Would you once again just repeat it for us?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. The amendment would read on line 28.19, after approved, insert, comma, prior to the acquisition, comma.
Members, that is your amendment before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have another question for Ms. Thornton. Ms. Thornton, is there any money on the bottom line from prior appropriations that has not been used or that has not been recommended in this bill?
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, and members, from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, the full amount for fiscal year 14 is recommended, and $4 million for fiscal year 15 is recommended. There is some money from several years ago that has not been spent that was in the LCCMR administrative carry forward in order to have dollars available in the case of the need for staff layoffs. That money is still there. It's about $200,000 and would be available if appropriated before the end of this fiscal year.
Representative Hansen, any further questions or comment?
When we get to amendments, I'll have a comment on that. And then one final question, Mr. Chair. Ms. Thornton, on the, I think there were two appropriations on page 12. Number C and number D. And I'm just wondering how those relate into TMDLs or if there's an impairment or how are these projects that will be working on impairments or TMDLs, or are they projects that are preventive in nature? Maybe just a little bit of detail on those two projects.
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, you're referring to on page 12 of 5C, Heron Lake Sediment and Phosphorus Reduction Implementation Projects is the first one listed on line 12.7. And my understanding is that that is listed for phosphorus impairment. It's also my understanding that similar application went in for clean water funding, and it was not received. It was for different projects. So I believe the goal would be, yes, to assist in meeting the TMDL, but then hopefully also further impairments. And then on line 12.17, 5D, Southern Minnesota Lakes Restoration to Le Sueur County, that is to install practices on up to on approximately 10 lakes and 14 waterways. And my understanding is that that is also under a TMDL for excess nutrients and is in a similar situation to what I spoke to about the previous one of an application with the Clean Water Fund. We did not have in our request for proposal this time a prohibition from coming in if it was to meet a regulatory requirement. We have had that in past years, and it's in the new request for proposal.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Thornton, I'm just following up on what you just said. Have we done these type of projects in LCCMR before?
Director Hanson, excuse me, Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, and members. I would have to look back. I do not have a strong recollection of doing these types of projects. As you know, we have a short record, I would say maybe before the advent of the Clean Water Fund, but we have a shorter record on working with that and looking at which fund funds projects.
Further questions? Representative Lagunas, would you like to go to the amendments?
I would. The first amendment, let's do is the A2 amendment, which by and large, members, is mainly technical, and I think for questions on this one, I would only draw your attention to lines 1.13 to 1.17, and there has been, as DNR has moved to capturing the costs of their work rather than having them be general fund funded for doing their administrative work on things like LCCMR. They're obviously, when there's money involved, people are always talking about how do you define who pays what, and this is the definition that LCCMR is proposing, and I think it goes along with what the legislative auditor has been telling us that, and these words are in here, the auditor told us that things need to be justified and documented, and I think this is just making this more precise. And with that, questions on the rest of this? I don't think there's any controversy or anything particularly interesting about the rest of it.
Discussion to the A2 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, saying nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. The next amendment is A3, and I would like to move the A3 amendment.
Representative Wiggins moves the A3 amendment. Discussion to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that happens, members, as we have advisory committees who recommend to us the purchase of lands, and then they go, passes the legislature and goes back to various groups that are purchasing land, we lose our sense of accountability. And so I am trying to bring some accountability back for purchasing lands. And one of the things I'm doing in this is specifically just having the commissioner of DNR sign off on these purchases. The other thing, if you will look on the back on page, on line 2.4, this is wildlife management area boundaries. And this is a little different. And what this is as groups have come forward to us and said, we want, and DNR has developed certain areas of land and corridors where we are to be purchasing land. And the reason we are, they want to do it is to have corridors that wildlife can travel up and down. But there is some question about purchasing lands in other places and making it perfectly clear that these would be priority areas. So this asks the commissioner to assess the existing wildlife management areas, determine desired final boundaries of each management area, and then their criteria for determining the boundaries of these areas. And the four criteria are listed, looking at ecological benefits of existing wildlife management areas and proximity to habitat corridors of high and other areas of high ecological value, proximity to federal and other public lands, and high priority infoldings and boundary expansions. I have talked to DNR about this language, and I see Bob Myers here. If people have questions, otherwise I would like to move the amendment.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Wagenius. I remember having an amendment up in committee that was ruled out of order because it was deemed that it was a finance amendment in a policy committee, and this looks like a policy amendment. So my question would be, was this heard in the policy committee, and is it germane in this committee to take it up this time?
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, anytime we are purchasing land, it seems to me that it is not policy, it is financial. And that's what this is all about. It is making what we do accountable, and I think that is always a prerogative of a finance committee to make sure that things are transparent. This is, adds transparency and to add accountability. This adds accountability.
Follow-up, Representative
Hamilton. Yes, Mr. Chair, and Chair Wagenius, you know, if you look on lines 2.5, it talks about the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall assess the existing wildlife management area. And again, this is a policy. And, you know, we had a debate in the Agriculture Policy Committee, like I said, and I was ruled out of order because of an amendment that I brought up. And Madam Chair, you were very outspoken, as you were, Mr. Chair, very outspoken against the amendment that I brought forth just because of the jurisdiction of the committee. And that's where I'm raising an objection to this amendment, not on the content of the amendment, but the jurisdiction of this committee. So, Mr. Chair, when this comes to a vote, I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Hamilton, are you asking for the overall bill or for this amendment?
For this amendment. This amendment.
Duly noted. Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. This bill is all about purchasing land. I think I'd have to go back and look at the number, but I think it's $13 million. And one of the things that we need to do is to make sure that this land is purchased in a manner that we say it should be purchased. And those are big dollars, and I think this is absolutely appropriate in a finance bill for accountability and transparency.
Representative Torkelson, you had a question?
I do.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it my turn now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Representative Wagenius, I'd like to hear more about the wildlife management area boundaries from the DNR I'd like to hear about the policies that are involved with this work.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Representative Torkelson, what specific questions do you have about this?
Oh, Representative Torkelson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, Mr. Meyer, I'd like to hear more about just what a wildlife management area boundary is.
Each unit that the state owns or the department owns and manages is set up by a meets and bounds boundary system. So it's the actual boundary that would be on a title of land when you purchase land. Those are the boundaries. The intent of this section in my conversations with the author is for the department to put together a list, kind of unit by unit. It's going to take us some time. We have 1,300 WMAs throughout the state, of what the final disposition of those units should look like. Kind of the desired future conditions, if you want to talk that way. And then also just so people can understand what the unit by unit, what that unit is going to look like when it's ultimately completed. That will give participants, stakeholders, sportsmen's groups, people who are looking to acquire land or work with the state to do things. It'll give them an idea of what the state's desires are. And when we talk about high priority inholdings and boundary expansions, people will know what the state is looking for, and there's a lot of people out there willing to help us, as we see in this bill or in the Outdoor Heritage Fund bill. The adopt the WMA program that we've talked about with people. People want to work on these lands. If we can give them a list of what the future condition is, I think there will be people seeking additional funding to help round out or to fill out those units. That's the intention of this language as I see it.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Meyer, what we're really doing is we're kind of setting up the vision for what may be someday included in a wildlife management area. And would this all of these inclusions result in purchases?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, it may or may not. There's a lot of different plans out there that are most of them are developed by citizens. We have the Citizen Advisory Committee for the wildlife management areas within the state of Minnesota. What they're proposing, their goal is at 2,000 wildlife management areas. Now, we'll probably never achieve that goal, but as we all know, goals are good to have. So by doing this work, will it result in the ultimate expansion and purchasing of everything that we identify here? No, but it will help provide guidance and direction for people who want to help protect, restore, and enhance lands to do so in cooperation and conjunction with the department. So I'm not saying that this will ultimately, if this work were to outline, say, 10,000 additional acres, maybe 3,000, 4,000 of that might ultimately get purchased. It's willing sellers, willing buyers, the need of funds. I mean, the legislature still has to appropriate funds to the department for us to do this, and we still have to have county board approval to acquire wildlife management areas. And this would be included in the boundary expansions and in holding as well. So.
Follow-up, Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, so some of these lands could indeed stay in private hands, and the private landowners could agree to work with the DNR and treat their land voluntarily in a way that matches up with the DNR's desires for this land to be managed.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, yes, by all means. It also may identify opportunities for landowners to participate in other programs that would protect their lands while also providing environmental benefits, so such as some voucher programs or working lands initiatives that talk about federal programs as well. So it's just identifying where conservation needs are and where ultimately we would like to concentrate our efforts to a certain degree.
Well, thank you. And just a final comment, Mr. Chair, this certainly sounds like policy work to me.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess first, Representative Wagenius, with the Section 7, which I think most of the questions are about, is it your intent to also put this in the Environment Finance Bill and or the Environment Policy Bill?
Representative Wagenius.
Representative McNamara, I hadn't thought about it. It depends on if we are going to be acquiring lands. And this is about where we spend our dollars. It's about where we spend our dollars. If it's appropriate because we're spending dollars, yes, but I don't know right offhand whether we are going to be spending dollars in the finance bill for lands.
Representative Backmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Wagenius, I mean, this Section 7 certainly deals with more than just specifically purchasing it in LCCMR money. I mean, it could be added to the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Bill, and it seems more appropriate to be added in the omnibus bill, either the policy or the finance one. It seems appropriate to me. And the other thing is, I think some of this is common sense and we probably don't even need it. I mean, I actually like what you're all saying. I just think it's inappropriate to be in this bill here, especially without a fiscal note. If you're asking the department to go forward and do this stuff right now, some of it they're kind of already doing, or a lot of it, I would say. But if you've got a specific direction you want them to go, it seems like it should have a fiscal note.
Representative Wagenius, I agree with Representative Kahn, and this is hard for me to say because I wasn't part of this bill, but this is probably the best LCCMR bill. It's really, really good. I think this policy in Section 7, we should just pull that out and put that. I mean, I actually like what you're asking for here and work with the department. And in this bill, I don't know that it's necessarily necessary. I don't think it's necessary and really probably doesn't prove much. It's a pretty big policy, and I guess I'd rather this part of it not be in the bill if possible.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would respectfully disagree that this is just policy. This is about where we spend money. And one of the questions that has been out there is people buying lands in miscellaneous places that don't fit into any of our plans. And this is public money we are spending. And I would agree that it would very appropriately also belong in the LOHC bill. That is an even larger question of purchasing lands. And I think that committee members probably remember the testimony we had from DNR when it was giving its budget overviews of quarters, and I can picture one in western Minnesota that was quite long and skinny as a wildlife corridor, and that is where they wanted to concentrate efforts of purchasing land and purchasing easements. And as Mr. Meyer said, also looking at perhaps working with private landholders to make that a vibrant wildlife corridor. So without other questions, I would...
Representative McNamara, did you get yours?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, on a different topic, Representative Wagenius, on page 1, line 25, you asked for an appraisal and a value over $20,000. Is it currently it's substantially more than that, isn't it? Is it a couple hundred thousand today?
It is substantially more, but again, it's just accountability for public dollars, and that is what I was looking for.
Mr. Chair, if I could just point out, and thank you, Chair Wagenius.
Mr. McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reality, I mean, if we were buying a $25,000 in-holding that might be 5 acres on a WMA or something, we might spend a few thousand to do an appraisal there. I think we have a current process that probably works, and I think, I understand the intent, and we've tightened up the appraisal process, now requiring actually two in the case of over $3 million. I think $20,000 is just too low. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill, do you have a question?
No question. With regard to the A3 amendment, it is all policy. It didn't go through my committee, so I'll be opposing the amendment.
Okay. Representative Fabian, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. actually, I'd like Mr. Meyer to come back down if possible, please.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, I'm curious to know what Representative Wagenius is proposing here. How is that going to change your current management plan for WMAs?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, I'm assuming you're talking about Section 7?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yep.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, there will be no change in our management, day-to-day management activities of these lands at all. This, the way I view this language, it will help people who want to help the DNR buy land or purchase land to protect it. It will give them an idea of where to concentrate their efforts. So this doesn't deal with the day-to-day management activities. It's more or less identifying. A lot of it will be a GIS type exercise, but it's identifying where future purchases should be concentrated. It's talking about what what is the next? It's basically, and I can provide the committee with copies of our WMA Citizen Advisory Group plans, but it's basically taking that and molding it into what the future of the WMA system should look like.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, you talk about the Citizen Advisory Committee on WMAs. Can you tell me how many people from Northwest Minnesota are part of that committee?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I cannot off the top of my head, but I will get you a copy of that report today.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is actually for the author of the amendment. I'm curious to know about a fiscal note. If we're talking about the DNR doing this, it would seem appropriate to me that we should have a fiscal note on this before this committee acts on this particular amendment.
Representative Wagenius.
When I originally did this, I actually had a timeline in here, and I took that out at the request of DNR because they said this is something we're working on anyway. But if I'd had a timeline in it, you know, get it done by a certain date, it would have taken a fiscal note.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After hearing the testimony this morning, I really have some very serious reservations about both Subdivision 2 and Section 7 of the bill, and I would move that we delete from line 1.21 on from this bill, and I'd like a roll call.
Representative Torkelson, I think we're on the A3 amendment currently.
I'm on the A3 amendment.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the amendment. A3 amendment, starting with line 1.21, you delete everything from 1.21 on to the end of the amendment.
Wouldn't that essentially just be the same thing as voting no on the amendment? Or
no, Mr. Chair, the first section of the amendment, lines 1.1 through 1.20 are appropriate, and I support them.
Well, I'm sorry, I mistakenly thought you said 1.2, not 1.20.
I said 1.21 on to the end of the bill. Perhaps you'd like staff to clarify amendments, so my amendment, so that it's in the proper form.
Discussion. Representative Wagenius, comment to.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know there has been a lot of pushback on accountability in purchasing of lands. We don't have the old-fashioned system where DNR did all the purchasing and the commissioner was absolutely accountable. That's not our system anymore. Our system now is giving money to groups who apply for money, and we don't even have a list of the lands that they are going to purchase. We give them money, and they go shopping. And because of that, we lack accountability. And we have a problem of knowing whether we're going to be paying a good dollar or too much. And we have paid too much for some land. And I think members are well aware that we have paid much too much for some land. What this does is to make sure that folks, including the public, get to see what the assessed value of the land is, not just relying on appraisals, but seeing what the assessed value of the land is. We have not required assessed value before, and because of that, we have lacked accountability. And so, members, this is all about accountability, and I would urge you to defeat the amendment.
On the amendment to the amendment, the roll call being requested, clerk will take the roll, chair votes, or folk votes, no.
Wagenius?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Anderson Key?
Yes.
Benson J?
No.
Lai?
No.
Clark K?
No.
Dill?
Yes.
Erickson R?
Yes.
Fabian?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Hackbarth?
Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hansen?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Keel?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Laura Joanne?
There being 10 ayes, 9 nays, the motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, we have part of the amendment left. That's from lines 1.1 to 1.2, and I would move the adoption.
We still on a roll call on this, or are people satisfied with the amendment as is? Representative Hamilton.
I'll withdraw my roll call. Thank you.
The A3 amendment as amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Additional amendments, members. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A5 amendment.
A5 is before us.
Members, this is a process that has been used with other funds for several years, and checking on the trust fund, we have not had restoration evaluations, and this is not using any additional funds, but is reappropriating the dollars as Ms. Thornton mentioned, so that we would be looking at evaluating the restorations that have occurred using trust fund dollars in the past. I think this is an important accountability provision, and it's similar to what we've been doing with other funds.
Discussion, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, you've deleted some lines on page 10, lines 10.3 through 10.7, and it talks about any revenue generated as a result. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm on the A6. I'll come back to that.
Yeah. All right, back to the A5. Further discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Does anybody take the A6 amendment? Representative Hansen moves the A6 amendment. Representative Hansen, to your amendment.
And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is going to the grazing proposal. And I guess that this is probably a philosophical discussion that we'll have about what is appropriate use of the LCCMR funds. The appropriation that's in the bill talks about providing dollars for infrastructure. And my understanding is that infrastructure would involve perimeter fencing and construction of water supplies or resources for grazing. The amendment that's the A6 amendment before you, what that does is refines the trust fund appropriations so that it is for development, implementation, and evaluation of grazing management plans to support conservation for the purpose of improving wildlife habitat. And my intent here is to keep the focus on improving wildlife habitat, not to turn the LCCMR, the trust fund dollars, into funding a grazing program. I would encourage folks to look at the constitutional language for the LCCMR. We often look at the outdoor heritage or the clean water funds, but the constitutional language talks about the assets of the fund shall be appropriated by law for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. And I believe the way the amendment is drafted, that meets that constitutional requirement. I don't believe that the constitutional requirement is met for providing funds for infrastructure.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had quite a bit of discussion last year about various grazing programs. We've had testimony regarding research that's been done on grazing programs and how effective they are, very beneficial for these lands. These lands are in state ownership, and if we expect livestock owners to utilize these lands for grazing, they have to come in and be able to contain their livestock and water their livestock, but yet they don't own the land. And there is certainly, if they're going to do this, they may do it for one season, and somebody else might come in the next season to graze that same land. And it seems to me it's absolutely appropriate that the state would have invested in what it takes to make this program work. If you eliminate this potential for the state to set this up in a way that it could actually work, you're eliminating the program. And we've had lots of testimony revealing how beneficial this program is.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just doing some quick math here, $600,000 on 10,000 acres, I come up with about $60,000 an acre. That's going to get to be some pretty fancy work on those few acres. And I agree with Representative Torkelson. If this program is going to be successful, there's got to be infrastructure put in terms of containment, fencing, as well as watering. So I like the language that's in the current bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think the question isn't whether grazing is a good idea or not. The question is, can these dollars be spent for grazing?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, maybe to follow up on that, I think the dollars can be spent for grazing as a management tool, but not for infrastructure. Not for creating watering ponds for the purpose of the livestock, and not for doing the perimeter fencing. I think you can do temporary fencing for paddocks, because that is to manage the grazing. But to put the permanent infrastructure in for the purpose of grazing, I don't believe meets the constitutional test.
Representative Wagenius.
Yeah. Members, I think it is worth reading the Constitution. It says, for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement, and this would be of the air and wildlife, land and wildlife. I think Representative Hansen makes a good argument that while funds could be used for, general fund money could be used for these purposes, and I would totally agree the general fund money could be used for these purposes. Using these monies for these purposes is not appropriate because of this particular constitutional language.
Representative Fabian, last question on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Hansen, you know, I kind of appreciate what you're trying to do, but I don't know how you're going to get people to get involved in the program if we don't have the infrastructure in place. And granted, it could come out of general fund, but this would be for the author of the bill and the chair of the finance committee. Do you have a line item in your finance bill that would pay for infrastructure on something like this? And then I have another follow-up question, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Right now, we don't have that bill developed to the point that I could answer your question.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like a roll call on this. And I agree with many of the comments that were already stated about the need for this infrastructure. And we had the cattlemen day on the Hill, what, a week or two ago, and they're talking about the importance of all this. And if you take a look at rotational grazing, it can and will enhance the habitat and all the positives that come from that. We had the Nature Conservancy talking about the positives of this as well. So I'd like to ask for a roll call on this and speak against it. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to be clear. This amendment still provides for grazing, and it could provide for paddock fencing, temporary paddock fencing. The reason for the amendment is that it has nothing to do with whether or not grazing is a good management tool. I agree that it is a good management tool. I don't agree that it is an appropriate use of the trust fund to pay for infrastructure to accommodate that. You have processes already for wildlife management areas where game and fish funds or other funds provide for the maintenance of those things. We can use fire, we can use mechanical, and I agree it's appropriate to use grazing. I don't agree that it's appropriate to use trust fund dollars that are there for the purpose as identified in the Constitution for infrastructure.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I will not do quick math anymore. I was wrong on my numbers, so I stand very much corrected.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Wagenius, comment.
I pass. I was going to ask about the math.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I think we ought to pass this amendment as it is, and when the full bill with general fund appropriation comes before us, look at the possibility of using general fund appropriations when required for something more permanent to put this in place. But this is experimental. I think we all agree we ought to try it, and it seems best to try it with temporary rather than permanent infrastructure.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Good closing comments with that. We'll take the week. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, my question then would be, what's the difference in cost between permanent and temporary? When you take a look at the labor expense of putting it up and the cost of the supplies and everything, do we know those dollars? I mean, it may be beneficial for everybody involved, the taxpayers and everybody, to go with permanent. As far as just saving money.
I guess that's not the question before us. We have this amendment. That's the intention to vote on this amendment. We've debated this for a significant amount of time. We have additional bills on the agenda we'd like to try to get to in addition to getting through this one. So
just comment on Representative Hamilton. Look at lines 111 to 113. Is that we're going to look at evaluation of the restorations, and I think we'll be able to get to that answer as we go into this project.
Final point, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be helpful for me. I mean, I'm kind of familiar with what some of the rules are with regards to WMAs and domestic animals and so forth that are allowed there. It'd be nice if DNR would bring us those current rules and how they're going to mesh in with this and what their plan is for moving forward.
I'm sure Mr. Meyer can come visit you and give you that information.
I think it would be valuable for the committee to have that too, though, Mr. Chair.
He can provide it to all of us. Thank you. With that roll call being requested on the amendment, all votes aye. Wagenius?
Aye.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Bly?
Aye.
Yep.
Clark?
Yes.
Dill?
No.
Erickson?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Keel?
No.
Hoppy?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 9 ayes, 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I would like to move that House File 1113 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 1113 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Wagenius, you're on your way.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've moved that House File 322 be laid over to be included into
Possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. House File 322 is recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion. Please present your bill.
This is extending the life of NEALC, and it's a good program. And part of my education in the agriculture finance or in agriculture policy committee was to learn many good things that are happening in agriculture that I wasn't totally aware of. And I believe this is a very good bill, and just move that we move it on.
Discussion to the bill, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Representative Erickson for carrying this bill, and I ask for member support. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, this bill, and we've had MALC for a long time, why should this be in this budget cycle? Shouldn't be, or in this budget jurisdiction, shouldn't be in the Education Finance Committee so that it can be measured along with the other education finances?
Representative Erickson.
I'm thinking that it's very much related to agriculture, and I think this is the appropriate committee that it should come out of.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, is there any evaluation of MALC's effectiveness on meeting teacher standards or meeting the goals for testing for education?
Representative Erickson.
My assumption that all of those goals and objectives aren't met.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, do we have any data on that?
Representative Erickson.
I do not have any data with me right now.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would argue that every high school should have ag classes and an ag curriculum, because I believe the it's somewhere around 96%. It's a high percentage of, or what was the percentage, Representative Gill? It was a high percentage of the FFA students do graduate high school, and it far exceeds the graduation rates of anybody else in the state.
Thank you for that, Representative Hamilton. I agree we should have more funding for education. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a comment on having the Education Committee oversee this. MEALC works with more than just K through 12 education. They also deal with adult farm management, which is under the auspices of the state college system. So the Education Committee would not be able to get their entire hand around MEALC. It encompasses more than just K through 12 education.
Thank you. Good comments. Further comments or questions? Questions from the public on this bill? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Erickson. House File 322 is laid over. Representative Dill, do you have your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to move House File 311 and for possible inclusion in the finance bill.
That motion is before us, members. Representative Dill, please present your bill.
Thank you very much. Members, the first thing I have is an amendment. It is the 311A1 amendment that changes the acreage from 128,000 up to 150,000.
Members, that amendment is before us to get the bill in the shape the author would appreciate. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Dill, to your bill. Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, this says appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Is that your intention, or is it from the general fund?
Representative Dill.
This would be from the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
That bill will be up on Thursday. So we, I think let's discuss it now. That
we can discuss it and lay it over for possible inclusion, the appropriate bill. Representative Kahn, did you have a question? Or?
No, I was going to say the same thing.
Okay. Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, and Representative Kahn, it would be nice if we could pay for this for the general fund, but I'm anticipating that the price tag is going to be around $45 million.
Okay.
I think the school kids might need that a little more than we should get the money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. But anyway, let me present the amendment. Some of you may have heard or seen on TV just recently or in the papers that the single largest tract of private land that remains without a conservation easement is in play since a new owner from Mississippi purchased the former Boise Cascade lands that belonged to the Boise Cascade Company for nearly 100 years. They are not the first company to purchase it, but they are actually the third company to own it. And this fall, when the budget was balanced in 10, the Boise administration decided to take a very favorable program that promoted recreational access, good forage stewardship, allowing for private lands to be managed to produce wood fiber for our mills and for biofuels and things of that nature, and cap a payment at $100,000 when there were five companies that own land that would receive well over the cap. In fact, the very land we're talking about would have received over $2 million, but it was capped at $100,000. And this was in special session that this cap was put on. The company then came back and said they went to court and they lost. And they went to appeals court and they lost. And subsequently, the company has said that the private land, and that's correct, it is, it belongs to a private company, and that they intend to, in fact, they have installed gates, and they have told the public that they intend to close it to public access, particularly for snowmobiling and some hunting and access to private homes. This land is not a one piece of land, it's somewhere north of 140. That's the reason I put 150 in the bill to make sure we didn't have too few acres. But this land is a checkerboard up in the Northeast that looks like federal, tribal, state, county, private, and other owners. And so the checkerboard, instead of being able to have a continuous access, for example, a road, or a snowmobile trail, or a hiking trail, or a partridge hunting trail, or any of those kinds of recreational activities, is disrupted many, many, many times along those alignments that have been in place for years because of this public or this private land and the potential to have it closed. Senator Bach and I, along with the help of some others, worked out an agreement that if during this session or in subsequent sessions we move forward with some kind of a program, either the reestablishment of the SFIA, Sustainable Forest Initiative Act payments, or a conservation easement on the land, that then they would back off the idea of closing it to the public. So the question is, do we want the land open? The question is, do we want, if it's not open, do we want the company to take the largest single landowner, private landowner, piece of land left in this state and fragment it into parcels that are going to be 40 acres or 80 acres or 160 acres or more, and make cabins and driveways and things of that nature, which will be detrimental to not only our forest products industry, but the health of the wood that's actually in the woods, and to recreation and to our aquatic habitat, wetlands, and imaginably almost every single imaginable thing that these acres provide for the state. With regard to the access, I thought it was the most interesting as this developed back in October, the calls that I got regarding this. A few people contacted me locally, mainly business owners, who said that this was just devastating news, that they were going to close the land, the Mulpus Timber Company, and that it would disrupt all of this recreational opportunity and affect their businesses. But by and large, and well more than any local person in the Northeast, the calls came from south of Moose Lake down to the Iowa border and even in from other states. And the reason that happened after I did some analysis on it in my thought process was that local people know how to get around. And they know how to avoid those parcels of land because they know where the federal and county and state and other parcels are. But the folks down here in the Twin Cities, they don't have a clue how to do that as a general rule. So they felt locked out. And they felt, well, why is this being closed? Because this was always public land in the first place, which, as I've testified, it wasn't. And it isn't. So the purpose of the conservation easement, the three counties that are listed on line 1.8 are where the land is located. The vast majority of the land is located in Coochaching and Itasca County, and only Coochaching and St. Louis County, only a small amount in Itasca. This company, the previous owner to this company, did a very, very large conservation easement on about another 150,000 acres a couple of years ago. So they're familiar with doing conservation easements, and they had 305, I believe, thousand originally, and they have about 150,000 left. And so this bill does exactly what we've done on other parcels, whether it be Blandon or Potlatch or Forest Capital / Boise, the former owner of the Boise land. This just continues on to this to preserve and protect and enhance for future generations, not only the forestry end of this thing, our aquatic habitat, our hunting habitat, and recreational access for future generations.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Till, it has been my understanding that DNR has been working for quite a while on an easement proposal for this piece of property. It was also my understanding that wouldn't be completed for a while. Do you know where DNR is in that process?
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Wagenius, I'd like for Mr. Meyer to come forward and talk about that because he's, other than me speaking to the company, to their company manager of the land, I'd like to hear from the DNR. I know that the company manager has told me they're in the process. I also know that at a dinner one evening, the commissioner told me that they couldn't get this done in a short order. If you can imagine these hundreds and hundreds of parcels of land and legal descriptions and all of the things that have to be taken into consideration. This can't be done like buying a house in town.
Mr. Meyer.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We are working with the company, MOPUS, the owner of these lands. We've had several meetings with them. Actually, we have another meeting coming up on April 9th to determine the amount of land that would be eligible for a conservation easement and then to find out kind of set the course on how we're going to move forward. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, identify the parcels, get the legal descriptions, do the appraisals, talk about the terms of the easement. But these are high conservation value lands that we are looking to protect forever in perpetuity for the state of Minnesota, for the citizens of the state of Minnesota, I should say. So we are working with them. I can provide you a more timely update as things progress. I know we have a meeting with the owners of the company and the commissioner coming up early April, at which point in time it will help define the project and the role of the project, the scope of the project, I should say, and we'll be moving forward, and we anticipate working with the Outdoor Heritage Council on this project as well.
Representative Wagenius.
So the price, two questions. A price has not been negotiated yet.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, no, that is done through an appraisal process, and I would assume there may be multiple appraisals. I can let you know how that process will unfold.
Representative Wagenius.
And the second question is, as we've come to understand the damage that invasive species can do to forests, will that prevention or management of invasives be part of the easement?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer. Representative Wagenius, yes, part of the terms of the easements, the existing easements we have is that they have to operate under the Sustainable Forest Resource Management Guidelines, which does include invasive species, specifics on harvesting rotations, setbacks. It's a very comprehensive list of protections and management practices actually developed by the Forest Resource Council that needs to be implemented for them to participate in the program.
Further comments? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dill, I sympathize with the issue here, but I think when you were presenting it, you talked about access. And going back to the constitutional language, this is similar to what we just talked about in the previous amendment. The Constitution for the Outdoor Heritage and the Clean Water Fines talks about protecting, restoring, and enhancing forests, prairies, and wetlands. But everything I've heard about this issue is about access, not about the resource. And so spending the money to provide access is not, I don't believe it's a constitutional threshold that's met. I know that there are some interests and there are some individuals that believe that the Constitution is about providing access, but it's about protecting the resource. Now, if there are unique forestry issues there, and I understand about forest fragmentation, but meeting the threshold for the Constitution for protecting the forest is different than providing access. And I'm just wondering what, if you can help with trying to describe that a little bit.
Representative Dill, final comment on this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure it's the final comment unless the chair insists on that, because Representative Hansen brought up a very good point. The highest use of the money in this instance is actually management, preserve, protect, and enhance. Those are the three key words. And the enhance particularly is what the forest sustainability part of an easement would address. And the fact that the wood is the landscape, that is all managed under a very prescriptive plan for the future use of that and for its preservation as well. That by far is the highest use. The second, one of the other uses that's very important is the fractionalization of that, as you had suggested. It depends on who you talk to of what the priorities are. If you're talking to a resort in Ash River, their highest priority is to make sure that that snowmobile trail doesn't end up being shut off. Or if you're talking about the Arrowhead Trail, their highest priority is that. But I know, having served here 11 years and been through the formulation, and in fact actually had in my bill, the Lessard Heritage language passed in the bill that I passed off the House floor and eventually became law, that the preserve, protect, and enhance is the highest feature. And so therefore I do not believe that there's a constitutional test here. Mr. Chairman, as well, Mr. Meyer reminded me that I need to make an oral amendment to the bill on line 1.6, changing 2014 to 2015. And I'd like to move that amendment to the bill.
Representative Dill moves that oral amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. The amendment.
Ms. Hunt.
Representative. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Kahn, realize we're over time.
The problem is that this doesn't belong in this bill. It belongs in the bill for the Outdoor Heritage Commission. You don't want this. You don't want that bill to have this bill to have to go totally to the Legacy Committee, which handles that appropriation.
This bill has been laid over. So,
all right.
That's
all right.
Part of the reason.
Well, that is being laid over.
Yeah.
Just
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. As we are developing this easement and the invasive species, I don't think it's sufficient to say that for invasive species purposes that you're going to be following the Forest Resources Council. We've heard testimony in this committee about climate change and what it is going to be doing to some of these forests. And so we need more. I think if we remember Dr. Peter Reich's testimony, he said there were three possibilities of what could happen to these forest lands. And one is just they become grass. Second, they could just become invasives. And third, we could manage to have a different kind of forest. And so it seems to me that science is telling us that this easement has to be extremely carefully drafted.
Members, we are past time. Representative Anderson, I apologize. We did not get to your bill today. We will put it on the agenda for Thursday's meeting if that's amenable to you. If staff would make note of that and schedule things accordingly. I do think we've had a good discussion about this. Representative Dill, House Bill 311 is laid over for possible inclusion in the appropriate bill. Members, thank you for your time. I apologize if it went over. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.